month ago, I received a package in the mail from a theologian I've never heard of, who teaches at an institution I've never heard of, a man named Thomas Ord, who teaches at the Nazarene College. You may have guessed he's not a Jewish theologian. And he sent me two of his latest books because he read an article of mine and he thought they would be pertinent. And they were two books making an extended argument that the central value of Christianity, their central virtue, ought to be love. So I read the books because it seemed like the nice thing to do. And I don't want to get into a discussion here about whether Christianity really is the religion of love or not, or whether Christians always live up to their standards any better than we live up to our standards. But it occurred to me that the subject is one that belongs in a synagogue also, and that we ought to make an effort on this day of rebirth and of new beginnings to do something rarely attempted inside the walls of a synagogue, and that is to talk about love. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make an argument for why love is important. I'm going to talk about what Jewish love looks like. And then hopefully we will leave this sanctuary resolved to attempt a more persistent and resilient love than we have heretofore achieved. I don't need to tell you that this is a brutal age we live in. All you have to do is open the newspaper, if you still receive a paper newspaper, or click on your newspaper, or scroll your newspaper, depending upon your gadget. But all you have to do is examine the news to know that this is a world of gruesome violence, that populations are terrorized all around the world. There's partisan viciousness as Democrats and Republicans have lost the ability to learn from each other, and instead they caricature each other, they yell at each other from across the aisle. We see examples of man's inhumanity to man in all regions of the globe. We see terrorism so prevalent that the newspapers don't even use the word terrorism anymore to describe the people who assault innocents and who murder children. Slavery, which we once thought was relegated to the 19th century, is now practiced in most parts of the world, especially victimizing children and women. There is sexual predation. We see bigotry based on faith or skin color or ethnicity or place of origin, violence against women around the world. The list goes on and on and on of people assaulted by the violence of others, and as a result, feeling increasingly lonely, lacking in community, lacking in belonging, and lacking in meaning. And the cycle spirals out because the more people fear, the more they give in to hate. The more vulnerable, the more they hate. The more rootless and unconnected, the greater their rage and their hatred. Adrift in meaninglessness, they confuse hatred for purpose. And they cling to their ways of despising those they don't really know as a way of avoiding their own fragility. Terrorists and extremists feed on the fear of local populations. They live on the way people feel assaulted and misunderstood or at risk, and then people feel further victimized, and the cycle begins again. We Jews know that same reality from our own history, both ancient and recent. We know that we were slaves in Egypt and outcast. We know that we were to them toevot, abominations. And so we caricatured them, they caricatured us, and we saw it as a cosmic battle between good and evil. Throughout our ages, there have been people who have assaulted the Jews simply for being Jews, and that continues in our own time around the world. most especially, I believe, in a level of hatred against the state of Israel that can only be characterized as insane. The need is so pressing because the hatred is so great. And Judaism's response to hatred has always been to redouble our efforts at love, to be able to love more persistently than they hate, more resiliently than they fear, to answer acts of violence with acts of justice, to be able to stand for values of righteousness and decency in places of terror and of fear and of purposelessness. It is time to reclaim chesed, Jewish love, as the call of this age and as the central Jewish religious value. And so, in this synagogue, today, we are going to talk about love. Now, why is love the antidote to fear and to hate? Scripture tells us, Olam chesed yibaneh, I will build this world with love. It turns out that the only force for building a new and a better world is love. Parents cradling a new baby understand the redemptive power of love. Children holding the arms of an elderly parent understand the redemptive power of love. All of us sitting in this congregation have been reading liturgical words of love and hearing the creative efforts of artists across the centuries who pour their love to us in music and in word. Only when people feel valued, recognized, affirmed, only then can they take the risk to see the humanity of the people around them. Our tradition understands that and understands that knowing that we have been chosen by God is precisely what gives the Jewish people our resilience and our fortitude. It is only through love that we can, in fact, become open to the needs of other people, to affirm their humanity, however much they may slight their own. The story is told of one of the great Hasidic rabbis in the late 1700s, a man named Reb Moshe Lieb Erblich, who was also known as the Sassover Rav, because he came from a community known as Sassov. So the Sassover one day goes into an inn, and in walk two Russian peasants, and they sit at the bar and they drink, and as they begin to fall into a drunken stupor, one turns to his comrade and he says, "Tell me, Ivan, do you love me?" And his colleague says, "Of course I love you. We're drinking together. Naturally I love you." And he said to him, "Then tell me, what causes me pain?" His colleague said, "I don't know what makes you hurt. I'm just your drinking buddy." And he said, "If you loved me, you would know what causes me pain." And from that day on, every time the Sassover taught, he taught his students that to love another human being means to know what causes them pain, to know what makes them suffer, to know what makes them hurt. And it's a small step from knowing what it is that causes someone's heart to break to feeling mobilized to do something to lift the pain. Another story about the same rabbi. It's told that on the holiest day of the year, Yom Kippur, his congregants were sitting in the congregation waiting for the services to start, but no rabbi. So one woman decided that she was close enough to her home that she could run home, check in on her child, make sure that he was safe and comfortable, and then she could rush back. No one would notice. So she ran home, opened the door to her hut, and there, sitting next to her child's crib, was the rabbi, holding the sleeping child in his arms. He looked up at her and he said, "I was rushing to get to shul on time, and I heard crying coming from your house. So I entered the house, and the child was awake and scared. So I rocked him in my arms, and we sang together until he fell asleep. And by then, I had forgotten what day it is today. What kind of a great tradition tells a story about a rabbi who forgets that it's Yom Kippur? Tells the story about a tzaddik, a righteous man, who thinks that rocking a baby back to sleep is more important than services. What a beautiful and wise tradition to understand that it is in holding each other, it is in singing together, that we make the world we hope to live in. Perhaps that's why Shir HaShirim, the greatest love song of all times, and the rabbis tell us the Bible's most sacred book, teaches us ki aza kemavet, ahava kasheh kisheol. For love is as strong as death and as mighty as Sheol. In an age in which there are merchants of death, in an age in which there are people who advocate a living hell for other human beings, we must respond with a redoubled ahava, a redoubled love. We must love stronger than they hate. We must love longer than they hate. We must teach them that our love will overwhelm their poison. You can tell a lot about a culture, it is said, by their vocabulary. I don't speak Eskimo, so I can't vouch for the claim that Eskimos have dozens of words for snow. I don't know. But I do know that we Jews have many, many, many ways of saying love. I want to share with you a few. The first I've already told you, ahava, simple love. Achva, the kind of fraternal brother and sister love that one feels for someone who understands your soul. Rachamim, the kind of love that comes from the word rechem, meaning a womb. It's mother love. And we even think that mother love is so important that we call God Rachamana, the womb-like one who births new worlds. Chafetz, desire, as in Mi Ha'ish, HaChafetz Chaim, who is the man who desires life. Ratzah, will, as in Yehi Ritzon, may it be your will, Lord our God, to grant us a sweet and a happy year. Chedva, passion. Re'ut, friendship. Chiba, love. Chashak, desire. Yedid, beloved. Chanan, sweet. And most repeated of all, chesed, love. But here's an interesting thing about chesed, and in fact about all of these loves. They do not refer simply to internal feelings. They're not just a kind of emotion. If all you do is feel something in your heart, take some pills, lie down, the feeling will go away. Love is not love if it does not produce loving behavior. And that's why chesed is almost always preceded by the verb oseh, to do. Chesed is not something you feel. Chesed is something you do for the people you love. So I would propose to you that Jewish love is covenantal. It's always about relationship. It is what takes place between two parties, not within one party. That Jewish love is dynamic, meaning it is always changing. It is always open to integrating new insights from the world, and it is persistent. It does not back down. It does not retreat. And that it represents the integration of emotions and behavior, specifically the emotions of affection, of empathy, of desire, of yearning, of delight, and that the way we express it is in three great clusters, the clusters of tzedek, of justice, of shalom, peace, and of well-being, bracha. Now that, and in relationship, you stand as a partner even with someone who is not your equal. Any man in this hall who is married to a woman knows that he married up. And any woman will be happy to affirm to him that she married an unequal. But such is love that it bridges that gulf. And unequals are able to stand in partnership and in dignity together despite their difference, perhaps because of their difference. Our entire tradition is an outpouring of covenantal love, so that God creates the world, we are told, in order to have an object to love. And then, as if that isn't enough, God rises up against Pharaoh and brings us to freedom because God so loved our ancestors. And then, as if that isn't enough, God brings us to the foot of Mount Sinai and there gives us what the rabbis tell us is a ketubah, a wedding contract. And the wedding contract sealing the relationship between the Jewish people and God is the very Sefer Torah, the Torah scrolls we read from. Ours is an ancient tradition of covenantal love. And strikingly, covenantal love is very different than popular culture's portrayal of love, in which love is the pitter-patter of a heart, but that pitter-patter only lasts as long as it takes to cook a Pop-Tart. 5 minutes later, your attention is on something else. Right? So we have all these romances. We can read about the various stars and their love affairs, and we can read about their breakup and their new love affairs, and their breakup and their new love affairs, right? That's not covenantal love. Covenantal love, we are told, focuses on understanding and generosity, seeing the best in your lover, seeing the best in your children, in your community, in humanity, in the world. And then, with a similar generosity, sharing in their struggles, sharing in their efforts. That love must be both dynamic and persistent. Nobody can be in a relationship who isn't open to changing. Ask any parent of any child, and they will affirm for you that what it means to be that child's parent is different now than it was a year ago. And it will be different, thank God, a year from now. Right? Love is always changing, but it must be persistent. When your child presents you with a challenge, it is your love that will give the child the strength to overcome. It is that urge for life and for wholeness and for connection that allows us to withstand the disappointments and the pains and the brutality. This our enemies do not understand. They rely on force, they rely on fear, they rely on terror. These things are static and they break. But love applied diligently and persistently will wear them down. It is the integration of values and emotions with deeds. One of the characteristics of every living creature is known to biologists as homeostasis. Homeostasis is your ability to maintain a consistent internal environment despite an external environment that changes. The reason that your kishkas aren't frozen solid in this sanctuary right now is because of homeostasis. By the way, congratulations on your air conditioning. It works very well. That ability to integrate is the hallmark both of life and of having character. And love is the ability to integrate. It is the ability to take in all the different things we feel and pour them out in consistent behavior. That emotional base is what inspires us to act and invites us to make a difference in the world. And the difference, I will remind you, is in three clusters of values. The first, tzedek. Tzedek is the value of justice. The sign of tzedek are two scales, evenly balanced. But one of the things we learn from that is that scales are always changing. They're always rocking back and forth, as is our justice. Judaism understands that love and justice are not conflicting values. They are dual expressions of one core value. Indeed, it understands that love is the source and the root from which justice springs, and that justice are the fruit and the harvest of real and abiding love. We understand that. Our tradition reminds us, V'ger lo tilchatz, ve'atem yadatem et nefesh hager, ki gerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. You shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the feelings of a stranger because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Or in the words of an ancient Jewish philosopher, Philo, be kind to everyone because everyone is fighting a great battle. We know that love results in acts of caring and of justice. Love is not weak. Love does not mean allowing terrorists to have their way. It does not mean allowing criminals to get away with their lives. It does not mean a world in which there are no consequences. Love is resolute and strong and insistent, but it is nonetheless love. And the second value is shalom, which is understood as peace, but it is so much more than peace. Shalom, you know, comes from the Hebrew word shalem, which means wholeness or integrity. The Jewish philosopher Baruch Spinoza writes that peace is not the absence of war, it is a virtue, a state of mind, a disposition for benevolence, confidence, justice. There's that word again. Wholeness and integrity means not making yourself small because others see you as small or because the world would have you shrink from your own greatness. Shlemut, wholeness, means offering to the world the fullness of who you are, your beauty as you are, your greatness as you are, and inviting others to rise similarly to their greatness. Our tradition understands that the value of shalom is an act of love so significant that it is nothing less than messianic. It will bring the age of universal harmony if we practice it with resolute determination. And then finally, the value of bracha, of blessing. There is so much bounty in this world which we did nothing to deserve. We were simply born into a world that was fully prepared for our arrival. And our task in the world is to savor it, to delight in it, and to help each other to do that as well. We make of ourselves a blessing. That's why the structure of Jewish prayer always starts Baruch Atah. Baruch doesn't mean blessed. God doesn't need our blessings. Baruch means the one who is the source of blessing. So we start off by saying, you, God, are bountiful, and then we specify in what way we are appreciating God's bounty at the moment. You are bountiful for giving us Torah. You are bountiful for giving us life and bringing us to this season. You are bountiful for giving us bread to eat. Jewish prayer is a resilient way of reminding ourselves of the bounty of being alive. And we are called to be in God's image. We are called to ourselves be sources of bounty and blessing, knowing that they are safe, or that there will be a meal tomorrow, we Jews are commanded to love. In a world in which people believe they can bully the state of Israel out of existence, we are commanded to stand tall and to love. In a world in which some go to bed hungry, some go to bed impoverished, some go to bed sick or lonely, we Jews are commanded to know what makes them hurt, and we are commanded to lift them up. On this Rosh Hashanah, a day of new beginnings, a day of blessing, I bless us all that we feel in our hearts the resilient power of chesed, of rachamim, of ahava, of love. And then, knowing that we are loved with an eternal love, we roll up our sleeves tomorrow and we return to the task of making this world a better and a loving place.